Thank you, everybody, for being here today. I'm Robin Malcolm. I'm the managing editor of HuffPost News Desk. Just to give everybody a little background on what HuffPost is doing with this project, it's called Listen to America. It's a tour across the U.S. We're going to 25 cities. This is our 11th city. And in every city, we're doing events where we are speaking to local people about issues that are on their mind. And then at night, we are doing an event like this, where we're doing some kind of forum on a topic of local importance. So I just want to give a quick thank you to WKSU, and especially Andrew Meyer, for being here tonight. And also the Art Museum for having us. And just say we did the event today in Cascade Plaza. We had amazing interviews. It's been really wonderful. I personally have really loved Akron. It's such a warm community. I'm so inspired by everybody that I've met here. So thank you, everybody, for being here. I'm going to hand it over to Andrew, who's going to introduce the panel. Panelists will introduce themselves, and then we'll get started. Thank you, guys.
Good evening, everyone.
Thank you. And thanks for coming out this evening. Just a quick intro on my part. I'm Andrew Meyer. I'm the news director at WKSU. I've been at WKSU for about 3 years now, and we have a great team of journalists that covers the region, including a lot of what's going on in Akron, including specifically what's been going on with the Innerbelt. So it's a pleasure to be here this evening with this panel talking about this very important topic to the future of the city. I've got a little spiel to give, but first I'm going to let the rest of the panel introduce themselves. Immediately to my left, we'll start. Marco.
Thank you. My name is Marco Somerville. I am currently senior advisor to the mayor of the city of Akron. I have served on Akron City Council as a ward council person and also as president of Akron City Council. Before that, I served as president for the Akron branch of the NAACP. I am a funeral director by profession, own a funeral home, and have owned some manufacturing businesses before that, too, also.
Good evening. I'm Kyle Kudichief. I'm fortunate to be program director for Knight Foundation in Akron, and I'm excited that this topic is being discussed this evening.
I'm Jason Segedy. I'm the Director of Planning and Urban Development for the City of Akron. I'm a lifelong Akronite, other than my two-year stint in graduate school, lifelong resident of the city's west side. I'm the Planning Director for Mayor Dan Horrigan. Before that, I was the Director of Urban Planning for Akron's Metropolitan Planning Organization, and I've worked as an urban planner for the last, it's hard to believe, 22 years.
Hi, and I'm Cheryl Powell. I'm Metro Editor for the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com. I've been in that role for 2 years, and before that, I was a reporter for the Beacon Journal for 18 years, about 15 of them covering the medical healthcare industry, and community reporter before that.
There's your panel tonight. Thank you all for being with us. A little preamble here. When Akron's Innerbelt was built in the 1970s, it was probably envisioned, as so many urban highway projects of the period were, as the great path to ease the commute of downtown office workers to their comfortable middle-class suburban lives. It never lived up to that purpose. Never fully completed as designed, but nevertheless, it did the same thing urban highways all over the country did, driving wedges through the middle of once vibrant cities, destroying once vital and solid working-class neighborhoods, and contributing to the urban population declines through the second half of the 20th century. Akron is getting something that many American cities in this situation don't. A second chance. An opportunity to rip out its river of concrete and try again. When the demolition of the Innerbelt is done, the city is going to have gained back 32-some-odd acres right in its heart, adjacent to downtown. What to do with this land? We're going to have what we hope is an engaged discussion with our panel and with you this evening. You're not just here as passive observers. We want to hear from you. We want you to be active participants in this conversation. We want to hear your ideas. A few ground rules, though. When we get to the turn of doing the Q&A with you, please identify yourself
when we call on you, and tell us where you live. Ask your question, raise your issue, but please, no grandstanding, and most of all, this is a civil conversation. Even if you disagree with the points that are being raised, we ask that you do so in a respectful way. So, to break the ice a little bit with the panel, first off, I want to ask each of you if you can relay any sort of personal connection that you might have with the Inner Belt itself. Marco, I'll start with you.
Thank you very much. I didn't also. I was planning director too at one time, but anyway, I grew up on the west side of Akron, and I did not live necessarily in the neighborhood that was affected. But a number of my relatives were displaced because of the Inner Belt. People in the neighborhood never really liked the fact that they were being uprooted for this highway, as we used to say in the neighborhood, a highway that went nowhere. And the fact that it didn't really seem to serve the purpose that they had. And I had said earlier, we were talking outside, and, I think one of the problems we had in the city at that particular time is that we had a planning department that was basically all civil servants, and the person who was the planning director had tremendous amount of power, able to secure grants and federal funding for practically anything he wanted to do. He withheld information from the city council. He withheld information from the mayor. And he basically kind of shaped the city the way that he wanted to shape this city. That's why we have a number of projects. I could go name a couple of them. One would be the Inner Belt. One would be the recycled energy plant. Others would be some of the playground projects that he developed, particularly in my ward, where it was basically all concrete, nothing soft. And even when the police would ride by these parks, there was no way to tell what was actually going in the parks. So I think that was one of the problems that we've had in this community. What we did years and years later, after a lot of damage had been done, that we did put on the ballot that the planning director should be appointed by the mayor. And then that way, if we didn't like the type of projects that were going on in the neighborhood, we could get rid of the mayor and get a new planning director. So that was the purpose for that.
We'll jump over to Jason, who is the current planning director. Jason, I'm curious, do you have a personal connection, a personal story about the Inner Belt?
No pressure, right? Yeah, I do. Actually, my first memory of the Inner Belt, I can remember exactly when it was because it was an impactful day, and that was July 4th, 1976. And I was 4 years old, and I remember going down there for the bicentennial. It's one of my earliest memories, and the road was under construction, but very little of it was done, and it was this empty piece of concrete, and that's why the fireworks were shot off. Down there, and my dad always worked downtown, and we lived 3 miles away. So as I got older, I kind of got into this line of work because I love cities and neighborhoods and was interested in this kind of thing. And even from a young age, I really wondered why was this road ever put here, and why do we have this road that until 1987 didn't even connect to a freeway on either end? So it was truly a pretty useless transportation route. And as I got older and read and talked to people, learned more about some of the history that Marco was sharing. But I think for me, what's exciting is what you said earlier, that this is, it's rare. It's a chance to actually perhaps undo or at least remake something that I would continue to argue was probably the single biggest mistake as far as an infrastructure project in the city's history.
Cheryl, you grew up in Twinsburg. You've been at the Beacon Journal for some time now. Do you have a personal story, a connection of any sort with the Inner Belt?
Well, I guess when I first started working in Akron, and when I would use the Inner Belt, I was like, wow, there's nobody on it. This is great. There's no traffic, which tells you it was definitely underutilized because you could pretty much go over whatever lanes you wanted. It was just all open. And growing up in Twinsburg, talking about a road to nowhere kind of reminds me, there was in my neighborhood, they called it the Bridge to Nowhere. It was always a bridge we played on as kids, over 480, and then it just went into the woods. Don't know why they did. It was supposed to be a connector, and then they, there was decided not to do it. And, you know, another thing built in the 70s that just ended up not going forward as it originally was intended. So kind of reminds me in similarities there and kind of what we hear from readers, too, after we do stories on the Inner Belt of questioning, like, where was the planning and all this money that went into these projects that went nowhere? So that's kind of my personal thoughts and experience with it.
Everybody up here, save me, has pretty deep roots in Northeast Ohio. Kyle, you were telling me you grew up in Bath. You've been around this area for quite some time. Do you have a personal story or any sort of connection with the Inner Belt itself?
It's interesting trying to come up with like a warm anecdote about a road, but I'm going to try to. First of all, I remember going to see the fireworks being shot off as a kid and being covered with people, and that, you know, that before knowing what reimagining a space could mean, Akron was experiencing it many 4th of Julys. The first car I ever bought was from Dave Walter Volkswagen, and the car dealers would always take you out on the highway because you could rev up your car as fast as you wanted to go to, like, test it out. So I remember test driving a car on the Inner Belt, but for the most part,
that
it was...
That was made for.
Yeah, yeah, right. They always said the city of Akron police never pay attention to the Inner Belt. So, yeah, so it served a purpose over the years. But, no, I mean, for the most part, it was just something that pinned in downtown that I didn't really pay attention to.
Other than a test track, Jason, I'm just curious, why did the city, you're a student of planning in addition to being a planning director, what have you learned about why the city thought it needed an Inner Belt? And also for context, what was it supposed to become?
So I'll try to keep this somewhat brief, but I think, you know, what happened in Akron with the Inner Belt, it's not fundamentally that different than what happened in a lot of cities. And we were talking beforehand about Robert Moses in New York, who was, you know, the very powerful planner in New York City that built a lot of these freeways, including an attempt to go right through Greenwich Village, which spawned Jane Jacobs' book, The Death and Life of Great Cities. And, you know, so in some ways it wasn't a unique story, but I think, you know, the idea at a time, I think especially in this part of the country where cities were already starting to lose traction and deindustrialize, was in downtowns were slipping this idea that if we put a road to bring people in, it would kind of beat the suburbs at their own game. And I've always argued if you try to be like the suburbs in the city, you end up building the worst of both worlds. You know, it really, like, I think too much parking is a good example of that. And that was just kind of the mentality. But as Marco said, you know, planning had a lot of power at that time, and there was a lot of federal money during the 60s and 70s. And, you know, the thing I try to remind myself of is to realize that there's 20/20 hindsight, and even though there were big mistakes made, that, you know, we have to be very cognizant of not making our own mistakes here in the present. But the context of the road was... This was, you know, at one time, in 1960, Akron had 300,000 people, and we've got 200,000 today. And the idea in all these forecasts were showing Northeast Ohio was really going to grow. Summit County, which has 540,000 people, was forecasted to have 1 million people by, I think, the year 2000. And so they had all these freeways planned. We were talking before, there was a freeway that actually went right up the Cuyahoga Valley, where the National Park is, which... the national park was a much better use, obviously, but the context of the Inner Belt was it was supposed to be a new freeway that ran from Barberton on the southwest all the way to Kent. And that's why if you're in Kent and you're on 261, it looks like a freeway because it was actually built to connect to the same road. And long story short, you know, environmental issues, funding, already as the road was being built, there was kind of a nagging realization, I think, that, you know, we really don't need this big of a road. And so the scope of the project kept getting compressed and compressed until, you know, a Herculean effort was made just to connect it to the west leg of the freeway, which is where it finally had, you know, at least a connection to another road.
You mentioned how the highway would have been much longer if it had been completed, and undoubtedly would have destroyed so many more neighborhoods and really changed the look of this part of Northeast Ohio. A little more context, Marco Somerville, the areas that were destroyed by what was built, can you describe, you grew up in these areas, what was it like before the highway went through? What were these neighborhoods like?
Well, I mean, I think they were pretty strong neighborhoods, and But a number of things happened in that neighborhood and around there. They closed. First thing they did, they closed all the schools. And you know, any time that you close schools in a neighborhood, you actually destroy the neighborhood. Because why? Because people don't want to live in a neighborhood where there's no schools. So and then the other thing they did before that too, they put all the public housing in the same neighborhood. They did not spread it around. They didn't make sure that everybody took a little bit of the public housing piece, but they concentrated it all in one part of town. And coupled that with the Interbell, coupled that with everything else they did, it just choked the community and it just killed the community off. And the community started falling apart. People start leaving. So a lot of times they were leaving because they had to leave. And they called a place called Opportunity Park, where they brought in Ohio Bell, or it's not Ohio Bell anymore, tell of my age, but you know what I'm talking about. And they brought in some other things that displaced people even more. But the sad thing about it, all those businesses that came in and all those facilities that came in, the people who actually lived in that neighborhood could not get a job, did not get employment, and it did not improve their standard of living.
So the neighborhood itself was already being targeted in a way before the highway was built.
It was all part of a big plan, I feel, and it's played itself out to where we're at today, and we're still trying to rebound from that, and we've still have, like I said, the public housing is still there. Most of it's all there. Safer Steam 1, Fowler 1, Fowler 2, Alpha Phi Alpha Homes. I could go on and on. Bon Sue is just so much that was put there and killed it off. And like I said, then with the schools, just kind of a sad commentary what actually happened to that neighborhood.
What was it like before that time, though, before the schools closed, before...
Well, I mean, it was just like any other neighborhood. You know, people lived there and people worked there. A lot of people worked in the rubber shops at B.F. Goodrich, so they had homes that were close to the factory. They could walk to work, which we're trying to still do this day, trying to develop jobs that people can actually walk to work. And it was that kind of a community. Had churches and had, you know, grocery stores and all those kind of things. And but over time, it just kind of eroded away.
Cheryl Powell, you've been at the Beacon Journal since 1997. You're now the Metro editor at the paper. I would imagine over those 20 years that there was a lot of reporting that you did and articles that you edited that looked ahead to the moment we're at now where the Interbelt is being taken apart.
Yes, I think the first discussions that started back in 1999 under then Mayor Plasqualek, where he looked at Milwaukee. And,
I was on that trip.
Right, where they and looked at the potential of what could be done when you take an underutilized road, decommission it, and open it up for other opportunities. The initial discussions, I was actually, like I said, the medical writer, and the initial discussions looked at using that because it's right there. That portion that's being decommissioned is right by Children's and Akron General. So there was talk of creating a biomedical corridor or biomedical sphere where, you know, the hospitals were kind of landlocked, particularly Akron General, that they could open up for some more development possibilities and have related medical development with that property. So that was the initial plans. I think that's 2006. There, I can remember covering a press conference with that topic. The problem, like a lot of things, ran into money problems, getting the funding to make that happen, as I recall.
Just quickly, you mentioned the Milwaukee trip. You were on that trip.
Yes.
What did Milwaukee do, and why was it studied as a potential model for what we're looking at now in Akron?
Well, I think Milwaukee took it and developed a great park around that one piece of the highway they took out, and they have a very nice festivals there every year. They built some really nice buildings with amazing parking that you don't realize are parking decks, you know, with the grass on top, and I mean, it just amazing what they did in that city. I know when we first went there, I said I had never been to Milwaukee. Didn't think much of Milwaukee, but I was more impressed after we got there. And that's the day that Mayor Pasquale got a ticket for driving too fast, and as we were trying to zip around that highway. But I think Milwaukee is done a great job how they developed that land and took advantage of what they had and made it into something I think that really ties into the community and really makes people in that city feel good about what they did.
Since the decommissioning of the highway began a few years ago, there have been a few ideas that have been tried out, and I'm looking at you, Kyle Kudachief, an urban forest that the Knight Foundation has funded a prototype of, also a very, very, very long community dining table. They're interesting ideas, but make the argument about what the foundation is looking at, the ideas, how they're more than just whimsy.
Great question. So there's a near term, as we think about the planning for the Interbelt, I think there's several stages to think about. Part of what those ideas were to get at is the near term. Mayor and his administration, several which represent around me, are going to be thinking about, so 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and so on, what is the long-term use? But today, if we all walk out of the art museum and head down to 59, it's closed. It's sitting there. Can we go have a picnic on it? Can we go fly a kite on it? What is it today? And so we've been trying to help the city answer that question and hope that the near-term test might help inform the long-term use. So the forest is going to be much smaller than the name implies. It will, Hunter Franks, who did the 500 plates, worked with the Horgan administration to identify two small parcels, one on the West Hill side, one on the downtown side, do two small pocket parks and use that activation to ask residents what would they like to see in the space, what would they like 59 to become. No one has a mandate. The city will ultimately make the decision, but to share that information with the mayor and his team, hoping that it helps. And in the near term, it gets some activity going so it's not just sitting there. And I will say, we're open to other ideas, too, as to what the space could be.
You mentioned that the city is ultimately going to be the one that makes the decision.
I think that's true.
It brings up a question I've been wondering about, which is, who actually owns the land?
So right now, the Ohio Department of Transportation owns the land. So it is state-controlled right-of-way. We've had preliminary discussions with ODOT, the Ohio Department of Transportation. They're very open to returning the land to the city. It's a matter of kind of negotiating how that happens and how that works. And what's kind of interesting about the Interbelt, it goes back to your question about how it was built. There was a thing called model cities that came out of the federal government in the 1970s, and it's kind of an ironic term, as is Opportunity Park today. But it's one of those things that there was a lot of federal money for urban renewal. And so the way that road was built, it was part freeway project, but part urban renewal project. And Cascade Plaza, which I think all of you from Akron, you know, are very familiar with, it was built as part of that, as is what was called the Super Block, which is where First Energy and Chase sit in that parking deck. And that's where Howard Street was destroyed. Howard Street used to come right through the Super Block and Cascade Plaza. So the reason I mention that now is there was a variety of federal funds and city funds that went into the acquiring the right-of-way. So we're working right now to sorting through with ODOT, you know, what was city funding, what was federal funding, what was state funding. I'm confident that that will work out. So the control would ultimately revert to the city, and then, you know, then we would start planning its future use.
We're talking about some 32 acres immediately adjacent to downtown. What's the value of that land at current market value? Anybody?
I think that's going to be determined. And the reason I say that is it's hard to have comps for that right now. You know, the one interesting thing about where the Interbelt sits is, you know, downtown, we observe this, Kyle and I, a lot. Cascade Plaza was built to kind of turn its back on the Interbelt because I think the idea was, well, who cares? It's a freeway. But now that we're going to reclaim that, And so there's not really downtown real estate that's real comparable, and then there's a cemetery on the other side. And so there are a lot of things that I think make the valuation of that land difficult. And I think in terms of redeveloping it, you know, two of my criteria for success are, one is that 20 years from now, when it's ultimately redeveloped, people will never even know that road was there, that it was done, it would be done so well. And I think, secondly, that it would truly be a place for all Akronites, you know, because the way it was built was quite the opposite of that. But I think as we start to think about use, you know, the very things that make the road a barrier, they're not going to go away when the road is vacated. So I think, and what I mean by that is, it will be a challenge to connect it to downtown or to connect it to West Hill, both physically in terms of being able to walk back and forth or bike back and forth, but also there's a huge topographical difference. You know, the bottom of that road is 40 feet below grade.
And that's not natural. That was done on purpose to put the highway through there.
Right. I mean, there was a little bit of a grade there from some of the research I've done. There was a little bit of a valley, but not nearly that much. And yeah, it will be a real consideration about how do you make that area feel connected, whether it's green space or some housing or any of the above.
You know, I want to make sure that we also talk about Howard Street. Because that's where a lot of black activity took place. That's where a lot of clubs, a lot of jazz artists stayed there. That was in the days when people couldn't stay in white hotels. They had to stay at George Matthews Hotel. He had a hotel right before you get to that trestle across from the Interbelt Bar. And he had a barber shop there. I used to get my hair cut there. And my aunt, she was a beautician in that. Next to it was a record shop. So if you ever wanted the latest records, you went right there to Dot Records. I remember that. He named it after his daughter. And up the street, you had the Green Turtle Hotel that had great food, and that's where people kind of hung out. And a lot of jazz artists played on that street. And it also was a place where a number of barber shops and pawn shops. And another person who was very instrumental in this town in capturing African-American life was Howard Stewart. They have a school named after him on Vernon Olin Boulevard, and he was a photographer. And a lot of his pictures are archived at the University of Akron. So, you know, the Howard Street was the place to be at the time, and through all this redevelopment, all that was destroyed and taken away.
Can I come back to your question about the value of the land? And I'm not a professional, so one of you guys can chime in. But the reality is the grant does not include the removal of the concrete, correct? So any site that were to go in to build would have to deal with the removal of that and whatever other infrastructure is under it before they build. That's a big cost, given that we have lots of sites in the city that would be ready to build. And so I raise that issue because we've got... we may have to work with what's there in the near term for whatever its use is going to be. And the topography is a huge challenge, too, for new construction. And we've got lots of land that could be developed before the Interbelt.
So, Kyle, you raise a really important point, which is, what does it mean when we say the city or whatever the function, the stakeholder is demolishing the Interbelt? What does it actually mean? It's more than just putting up barricades and saying you can't drive on this road anymore. Jason?
I'll jump in. I think Kyle articulated really well what the current project, which is wrapping up, does and what it doesn't do. So what it does do is it rebuilds the parallel streets, Dart and Rand, to carry the traffic that the Interbelt used to do. And it will vacate that northern, you know, three quarters or so of a mile. There's also a part of the project that removes the State Street Bridge over the Interbelt. But what it won't do, as Kyle got at, is it won't really remove any of the stuff that's there, the concrete most particularly. And so I think that really points to the wisdom of the approach that Kyle was outlining earlier, that we need to look at this in a time series of short, medium, and long term. Because I think in the short term, there are things that could be done to beautify that area, maybe to green it up, that don't cost an arm and a leg. You know, theoretically, we could bring in topsoil and cover that concrete and plant stuff there or make trails or whatever kind. I think it's the kind of thing that that Knight was getting at with the forest prototype. And then in the medium and longer term, we get a little bit more time to think about the use, see how the community reacts to it, get feedback and input from people. But I think it will be important for us to, in the short term, you know, make that road feel and look a little better. I mean, fundamentally, my joke is it doesn't really look that different now than when it was open because there was so little traffic on it. But in serious terms, we do have to come to grips with what happens in the short term. And then I think the longer term, the mayor's articulated, you know, a couple different thoughts, maybe some green space and parkland that the whole community could use, perhaps some housing or mixed-use development in part, and maybe a water feature that could help with some of our stormwater or some of the other things we're doing. I think one other thing I think about a lot with the reuse in terms of the community space is just that it does have to be something I think that can be used by the whole community and really appeals to everyone. Because it was a very publicly, you know, unfortunately and really wrongly, in my opinion, implemented public process to build that road. And I think we do have to think about how do we make an inclusive and an equitable public process to reuse it.
Cheryl Powell.
Yes.
Does the Beacon Journal hear from its readers? I want my inner belt back. I miss that highway. It's inconvenient
no.
that it's not there. Do the reporters run into anything like that when they're reporting on the story?
No, surprisingly not. And trust me, if you have part of 77 or 76 changes going on there or the Broadway interchange, you know, things going on there, we hear all the time if those roads are closing or detours. This one, it's, I don't think, going to be missed very much. I think, again, what we did hear is more of the frustration of why was it built in the first place and more government bureaucracy, misspending of our money. I mean, that's kind of the, talking to the reporters, that's what I've heard them saying. And going back to the short-term tree reuse, I was having a thought. Have you guys thought of, has there been thought of taking, I don't know where all the dirt is going from the big sewer project. Can we dump that on the inner belt?
We have had that conversation, and a lot of that is going to be rock and shale, and so it's not real conducive to filling that trench, but that was actually one of the things that myself and some other people did ask our engineering bureau to look at. Could we, because it intuitively makes sense, you know, we're putting a giant tunnel right underneath it, could we? But I think that is one of the decisions early on for medium-term use we have to make, too. Would we physically alter any of the topography? Because that's something you need to figure out, you know, before you start to build things. And I just one other thought that Cheryl triggered asking that question is, you know, I look at something like the High Line in New York, and it's, you know, at first blush, it's very different than the Inner Belt, but fundamentally, it is an old transportation facility that got a new life as something else. And so I think that kind of out-of-the-box thinking about what could we do with this that would make it a compelling public space, because I'm sure in 1977 in New York, if somebody proposed there were going to be millions of tourists, you know, on that High Line, people would have laughed. And last time I was there, I saw a hawk land in a tree, which is pretty crazy in Manhattan, but it's a great attraction.
I want to come back to something you said earlier about in my opening about how the Inner Belt really created this wedge through the middle of the city. And if anything, I've found that during the demolition, the sense of separation seems to be worse. Personal story: I was going to the zoo. I think it was about a month ago. I was coming from the east side of the city. And it really took some work, even more work than before the work started, to get over to where the zoo is. And isn't it important, so this is for anybody on the panel, isn't it important that part of this process should be about knitting the city a little bit back together?
I feel like I've been talking too much. I think it is. And you know, this is really thinking ahead, but my hope is as we work with this part of the Inner Belt, I think one thing that's unfortunate, it can't be helped, but we have to work past it, is the part of the inner belt we're removing is the first part that was built. It was built from there south, but it's probably arguably the part of the road that displaced the least people and had the least impact on the community. The part that Marco was talking about over near Wooster Avenue at that time, that was really ground zero for where the displacement and a lot of the inequities happened. And, you know, one of my hopes is that over time, we can consider closing more of the inner belt and working our way south. I mean, that's right now, that's just kind of an idea. We would need funding to do that and so forth. But I think it's important we think about it now, because I think that's the part of the community in particular that we really could try to build back. Unfortunately, as Marco said, the east side of that, you know, the housing is virtually gone. You know, where First Merit and AT&T and some of the other things that were put in there. But I do think in the short term on the part we're talking about today, and then in the longer term for the part to the south, we always have to think about how we connect the community, not just physically, but also socially.
Marco, let me get your two cents on this. When you were councilman, this was your ward. The inner belt goes right through it. It's now your daughter is the councilperson for that ward. What do you think about this idea of trying to bring the two sides back together?
Yeah, I think it gives us a great opportunity to do that, to bring both sides back together and to kind of right the wrongs that we've done in the past, because we're all trying to get to heaven, and this might help us all if we can do that. So I think it's a great opportunity, and I just hope that, and I know the mayor wants to do this, and I know Jason does too, we've talked about a little bit inside, to make sure that the people in the community have a stake in this project and able to talk about what they would like to see and try to figure a way to do it rather than us in City Hall behind some closed doors make these decisions. So I can tell you that the mayor wants to do that, and I know the mayor will do that.
Kyle, the Knight Foundation has put out a lot of seed money to inspire ideas for what could be, but the Knight Foundation isn't going to do it alone. So who else can get involved with this, and how else can they get involved?
I mean, to build on Marco's comments and Jason's reference to the Highland, what an opportunity for Akron to show the country how it's done. I mean, the other cities around the U.S. are dealing with this same challenge and have been dealing with it for decades, but ours has been getting a lot of attention because of its proximity to downtown. And so though it's a huge challenge and will be a huge cost, if we can get it right, we could show show the rest of our city, show the region, and show the country how it's done in an equitable way. And Marco's points about engaging the neighbors is so critical for any project, especially this one. And I think, too, we put too much pressure on ourselves that it's going to be one thing, that there's going to be one, like, master plan, like Amazon's headquarters is going to land there, or whatever the whale of an idea is going to be. And I think what will ultimately get the inner belt to a place that's good for everybody will be a sum of small things, of breaking it up and looking at, well, what's actionable now, what needs a little bit more time, and what's kind of the big, hairy, audacious goal, but let's do the quick win stuff immediately. So from Knight's perspective, where we can come in is some of the risk capital. If we do something that sounds a little crazy, the city doesn't have to explain it to voters. We could say, oh, it's just a grant, and move on. But we think that... Yeah, like the forest. Let's say the forest is an absolute failure. At least we tested the green space. But I think where the forest is going to work is most people that I talk to, and panelists, please share if you have a different perspective, green space seems to be the most popular answer. We do any community meeting in Akron, what's your favorite thing about being here? Always the parks. Every time, doesn't matter who you are. We all love our parks because we are proud of our parks. Why don't the people downtown, why does the gateway to the national park have to be in the valley? Why can't the front door of the national park be in the heart of downtown or on Main Street or at Summit Lake or pick your landmark? And how might we use this property and this time to extend that invitation to folks all the way throughout the city? So,
Cheryl? I say, and I agree with that too, because I know my friends who grew up here like I did in the Akron area, and then they move away and say, you don't know how lucky we were, you know, with all the parks and that in Northeast Ohio. So I think people do appreciate that. One thing I know, and we've covered a lot too, is what's different about this project, a lot of times it's a top-down approach where it's all coming from this is what the planning director or the mayor says, and this is how it's going to be, there's been a lot of effort to have different meetings or engage, I think, college students we covered. There was like a meeting where designers, you ask them, what are your ideas at Kent State? I mean, I think that that's what's cool about this. And different is the city leaders are really trying to listen to the people to say, hey, you live here. This, you have a vested interest in this community. Tell us what you envision. And you get some interesting things. I think one was a mountain bike park. Is that still in there? That was one idea. Somebody said, let's flood it and do ice skating. You know, I mean, so you get some different things. Some things might be a little off the wall and not happen. But when you have all these different flow, you know, flow and exchange of ideas, you come up with some things that really can make Akron stand out.
I think you've created the perfect segue there. And that segue is to you guys. It's time for your questions. If you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll have somebody come around with a microphone. Way in the back. And again, a reminder, when you have a question, please go ahead and identify yourself, even if we know who you are, Ron, and tell us where you live.
Ron Syroyd. I started out in South Akron, grew up in Goodyear Heights, East Akron, and now I'm in West Akron, trying to cover the city by myself, I think. I'm familiar with a lot of the plans that had come out before, and one of my questions was, what is the general plan that the city has? Cheryl, I think, just addressed some of that. Oh, by the way, Marco, we used to go down to the clubs down there on Howard Street, and we miss them too, but we were always scared to go down there. We were only 11 or 12, and they chased us out or threw us out. And that young kid that was pushing you around over there at Dot, that was me. The other place we went was Ed Fred's for music. I sort of miss whatever character that we used to have in downtown Akron. And along that line, I thought that something that could have been done, possibly will be done, is the backside of the building's Civic Theater. I'm a former vice president of the board of the Civic Theater in the 80s, complete disclosure. We thought that the back end of all those buildings fronting the canal would make an exceptional urban type of a park with patios and different entertainment venues on the backside without going necessarily to green space. But I'm wondering what kind of plan the city has had for that whole stretch. But getting back to some of the things you talked about, are there funds and grants for somebody to build? Because the cost of demolishing is going to be expensive, and then it's going to be extensive because of things that will be discovered underneath the concrete, underneath the support structures. Somehow that has to be addressed. In the past, there was federal funding and city and state. I'm wondering, has that been explored already to be able to look at what could be done down there?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start on the planning part. So great question, and timely, because this week the mayor is going to the Mayor's Institute on City Design, which is a prestigious event, invitation only to mayors across the United States that have design, urban design challenges to overcome, and this is going to be his presentation. And so the purpose of that will be to get some input from some national experts on kind of what could this space be. As we talked about up here a couple minutes ago, you know, there's also the bottom-up approach of we need to go to the community and talk to people. But I think on the, you know, Kyle got it a little bit of this. In some ways, I think we have to think about the Innerbelt quickly because, you know, we want to have something happen there. But in another way, I think we actually have some time. And so, especially if we were to kind of green it up, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud right now, but we don't necessarily have to spend a lot of money to green it up. You know, theoretically, we could go in there with bulldozers. They wouldn't be free. Pull down those banks a little bit, cover it with dirt, start to plant things and have trails. You know, that wouldn't be free, but that also wouldn't cost money. So I think it's an open question. Do we need to go in there and actually physically rip stuff out right now? I think, you know, and if we were to do that, that's probably a little longer time period. We've got some time to think about what goes there. I think the, you know, and I've mentioned this to the mayor, I think the thing we really want to avoid is just the first person that comes in and says, I want to do this. There will be good ideas, and there may be ideas that do happen in the short term, but I think it's important we vet those and think real carefully, because I think, and I will say this as a planner, and yes, urban planners bore a lot of the blame for that road, but there is a reason for the profession, and I think what we don't want to do is just do things short-term thinking and then repent at leisure. You know, so if we, and I don't think this is going to be the case, if we approve a parking deck to go there, it's going to be real hard to build around that thing, and I wouldn't recommend doing something like that there. But I think that's the kind of thing that we really need, you know, short-term, green it up, a little longer-term, think about how it relates to downtown. Just one other real quick point, and we've had this discussion too, is as Kyle said, you know, this is a city built for 300,000 people that has 200,000. We've got a lot of spaces in this town that can be redeveloped, often none of them real easily. That's the challenge of working in an older industrial city. But we also want to think about our current downtown and make sure if new stuff, whatever it is built there, it doesn't detract from the existing downtown. And I think there are ways we can do that. For example, if it were housing, we need new housing downtown. That's probably not going to detract as much from Main Street. If we were to build a new, you know, Crocker Park style retail place, maybe that's going to give us pause because we don't want to damage the retail downtown. So I think those are all the kind of things that are swirling around. But I think it's fair to say we're at best, we're at the end of the beginning, you know, on the planning. We're not even close to, I think, having really a super detailed plan yet.
Does anybody else on the panel have thoughts about Ron's question? Want to follow up? Who's next? Right there. Yep.
My name is Jim.
No, I'm sorry. Back. Wait for the microphone. No. Right where you are. Sorry. We'll get to you, Jim.
My name is Demetrius Holmes. I'm a lifelong resident of Akron, Ohio. I was born in West Akron, raised in North Akron, and moved back to West Akron again. I thought it could be nice if, you know, we already have a polymer plant out in East Akron. Maybe we could have one closer to downtown. Maybe that way we won't have to go nowhere else to look for work. Just go downtown. Like we used to.
Any thoughts on the panel?
I would agree with that. If we could have employment where people could go to work, we need to look at that. And I know there are some people, I'm not really trying to say any name, let me be careful about this, but who are thinking about maybe expanding their offices, and they have looked at certain portions of the inner belt. We just tore down the AAA building. Would be a great site for something there, and some other sites too. And maybe some of that dirt from the tunnel we could take to the Rubber Bowl and dump it.
We can bring in the Rubber Bowl and Rolling Acres into that. And just one other thought real quick on the jobs part. I think, you know, there, depending on how it's redeveloped, there could be a place to do some sort of creation of space for employment, but I think another advantage of thinking short term about making that area attractive and maybe having a green space would be a lot of people are looking for that. That could actually enhance downtown, and then vacant land like Marco mentioned, the AAA or other sites, you know, it's an attraction to get more people downtown. So I think either way, if we do it smartly, there's economic development potential almost to any type of use there if it's planned right.
My name is Jim Allen. I live in West Akron. What is the current status of the old Mayflower Hotel?
Boy, I don't know if we have enough time for that. I mean, the current status is that it's, you know, it's home to 233 residents, and there really aren't any plans at this time to change that. It's a complicated building. It's privately owned. It's got vouchers from the Akron Metropolitan Housing Authority to house the people, but at this time, the city doesn't have any plans to change that.
I mean, it's just we can't do it. The cost is just astronomical to move everybody out. If we were to move everybody out, we would have to keep that building open the whole time and build another facility someplace else. And until every person was moved out of that building, we'd have to keep utilities on, keep heat in the building, and it's and the person who owns the building wants way too much money for the building. He is trying to sell the building, and he hasn't signed up, I think, to extend his vouchers yet, but he could, and if he does, then we're going to be locked in for another 20, 30 years. There's going to be nothing we can do about it. But we really have tried and looked at so many different ways to do it, and it's such a difficult thing to do and such a costly thing to do. I don't know what we could do about it.
These people who live there are low-income people, and they love the place. They feel safe there. Everything that they want is within the area.
You know, and I would agree with that. And, you know, I don't have anything wrong with them staying. I think that there needs to be a little bit more support. I don't think the people who have it now have really given the people who live in that building the kind of support that they need. They could do a much better job providing some services and some other things in that building. So it would be a good place for them to stay and also would mesh well with the downtown also.
To have one quick point on housing in downtown, and just to highlight the fact that we're about to go through a pretty significant shift in 2018 with the hotel at Cascade Plaza, the landmark building, and potentially the law building. I don't know if that's still in the mix, but you know, hundreds of units coming online within one block of the Innerbelt, and if it were to become a park, that is a built-in population that would need a place to walk their dog and go for a jog. I mean, they have the towpath, but to the Mayflower folks, they're going to be in a neighborhood again, rather than feeling like they're on an island as one of the only, you know, residential units aside from student housing in that part of downtown. I hope that that means a better life, quality of life for the folks at the Mayflower and for all the other residents downtown, that more people is better for everybody.
Hi, my name is Lynn Clark. I don't live in the city of Akron, but I've worked in the city for a number of years, and some of you know me. As we talk about housing in downtown, you know, that new university housing, the student housing opened, charging $700 a bedroom. You know, very expensive for the students, very unaffordable in the long run. You know, as we talk about the landmark building, the law building, and others flipping over to housing, how are we going to keep the costs of that housing down to an affordable level? And I'm not talking for the folks like in Mayflower where they need a voucher. But I'm talking for the folks who make $35,000 to $40,000 a year and keep the housing costs reasonable, as well as provide some services down there like a downtown grocery store or transportation downtown out to Dave's Market or Aldi's or wherever they want to go. How is that being planned? Is that being considered, you know, as to what you're going to do with that? And the housing costs right now in Summit County, the average is $744 for a two-bedroom. That's really steep, given the average income in Summit County. The average household income is about $60,000. So when you're taking $10,000 to $12,000 of that just for housing, and that's not utilities, taxes, and some other stuff, you know, how are we going to make it work?
To add one point, Lynn, I would never question you on housing. You are one of the experts in the room, so I preface my comments by saying that. But Knight Foundation partnered with the city of Akron on a series of research reports around housing in the city. And what we found is that Akron is not one place, but 24 different places, and each neighborhood has a very different profile as it relates to housing. And many of our neighborhoods fall on the opposite end of the spectrum from which you stated, where, you know, the the housing is so affordable or so cheap that people can't rehab a home and get the equity out that they put in into it. So I just share that because we're downtown's not on an island. As you know, it's flanked by those inner ring neighborhoods, and we're hoping that we look a little bit more comprehensively at all of the housing options that are within close proximity of the city.
And I think just to add to that, I can tell you, you know, from the perspective of people living in downtown right now, the median income downtown is $11,000 a year. And so looking at, you know, the city's income profile, the median income in Akron is $35,000 a year. As Kyle said, we have the most affordable housing market in the United States for cities with the metropolitan in the top 100 largest metropolitan areas. So there is a very real question that you bring up, which I think is a good one, of it's a population that, you know, doesn't have real high incomes in general, but we have very real issues of we cannot get new housing built unless it's built, generally speaking, at a certain price point, because it costs a base amount of money to build something. And so if we don't want a downtown where no one lives, we've got to look at, I think, getting a mix of incomes. And, you know, right now in and around downtown, counting the students as well, it's primarily a low-income population. I think one of the things that the city's trying to do with our 15-year tax abatement is to create some diversity in income in the core of the city, because the core of the city is overwhelmingly low-income. Like Marco said, you know, no low-income housing was built anywhere in the suburbs or even in a lot of other parts of the city. And so I think while we have to be very sensitive to that issue and think about it because it's important and it's real, I think it's not, it's, we have to think about mixed income housing. So having an apartment that rents for $1,300 isn't necessarily wrong as long as we've got an equity and a mix of housing. I think we actually do want people, you know, wealthy people, middle income people, lower income people coexisting in downtown. It's a great question because it's a delicate dance to try to achieve.
And I agree, finding the right mix, which is what looks like you study and look at doing, but it seems like where we are at the Beacon Journal, we are surrounded by these fancy, expensive student housing. And interestingly enough, like the one next to us, I think it's 22 Exchange, started as just student housing, and then they opened it up. I don't think students had the money to pay $750 a student to share a room with four people. And to the, and I think the market forces will kind of take care of that too. Hopefully we don't end up with empty buildings, because I know we even, I came out to my car the other day and there was, you know, a flyer from 22 Exchange like, oh, want to live downtown, live here. So, you know, obviously they are seeking residents. So I think it is important to get the right mix and really make sure that the demand is there for what's being built so we don't end up with a bunch of underutilized buildings.
We're having a forum tonight talking about what to do when the Interbelt goes away. Maybe it's not surprising that there are questions about housing in the immediate downtown area are coming up, considering the fact that when the Interbelt went in, it took out so much housing, and housing is really a focus of where the downtown is going in the immediate future. Next question. Let's get to the very back of the house here. All the way back row.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep.
So I grew up in Akron in Goodyear Heights and Firestone Park. So those are planned communities around industry. And it strikes me that given the time frame that you keep talking about wanting for this to evolve, that now's the time to think really big and to think about form and function of Akron for the future. How will people live here? And how do we want them to live here? So what will the future industries be, and how should the city align to that? Because what we have right now is an innerbelt that sits in a natural spine, connecting a national park, connecting water. We have natural elements that, you know, from a triple bottom line to work from environmental, community, and economic development, but to really say, you know, how important is Akron to the future of the region, to connecting to our neighbors that are, you know, to the north and to the south and to the east and the west, and how does the bigger plan look? And we seems like we got time to talk about that. And I don't hear that conversation. I hear, well, we want to do things in pieces, which is great, but at some point we really need the whole picture. We need a whole design mentality, a whole system kind of, and wondered when that will happen.
Well, it's a tough question, Gina, because one of the things I told everybody when I had the honor of coming on board the mayor's team is I could shrink down from regional planning to 62 square miles. But it is a good question. I think it is important to realize Akron sits in a really unique context that I think people forget this, that live here, or even for some of the national audience that might be watching this, is, you know, we're in the 15th largest metropolitan region in the United States. This isn't in the middle of nowhere, and this city sits in a region of over 4 million people, and, you know, each of these cities are connected by various types of links socially and culturally and physically as well. So I think part of, you know, and it goes back to the, especially the who lives here and how do they live part of your question, I think there's a real opportunity. People are hungry for urban living again in the United States. That's taken different forms in different places. We really want to be, and this is the mayor's goal of getting back to 250,000 people by 2050, we want to be a city where people from the region can live. You know, when we launched our tax abatement program, people would come to me all the time and say, well, who's going to live here? And I'm like, there are 4 million people that live within an hour's drive of here. There are plenty of people that could live here. The problem is they don't live here. They live in the suburbs or elsewhere. And so I think the city really has to think about how are we competitive in a market-based environment for people living here, but still thinking about equity. And I think part of that delicate dance that I mentioned before is, you know, this is one of the, and I say this as a government official, one of the lessons of the Interbelt is the puppet master type planning with the top-down plan doesn't always work out the way that people think. So I think it's important, you know, I think the city does have an incredibly important role of being a catalyst and a guide and coming up with plans. I think I would obviously say that plans are important, but I do think, you know, that vision or how everything fits together is a complicated question that involves not just the public sector, but nonprofits, philanthropy, and the private sector.
Anybody else have anything to add on the panel? Next question. Where's the mic? How about right there?
So I was, I really liked what Jason said about the possibility of expanding. Oh, Tom Ginder, lived in West Akron the last 25 years, raised my kids here. And I'm really excited about the possibility of expanding that 32 acres to the south. And, you know, we have a great ring around the city that goes from Summit Lake all the way up to the Interbelt nightclub that Marco mentioned, and all the way across to the new Stark State campus. And right now, that's good for cars, and for the most part, not too many cars. And I would be excited to see that entire arc to be available for people at a people-level scale that are on other vehicles or on their feet besides cars. So Greenbelt and bikes, a way to get around town without, now that we're changing that. The other thing is any development that we do there, I would be excited to see small projects. You know, the cities have developed over the course of centuries with small projects. It's only recently that we start putting six or seven buildings or super blocks together to give it to one developer to say spend $100 million or $35 million here. And I would like to see it developed on a smaller scale so that the people of our community can be those developers.
Do you have any specific suggestions?
Well, if we're going to look at this 32-acre parcel and we're going to say we're going to open it up to development, let's say on the north side or the south side or east or west or whatever direction that is, that it not be granted to a single developer. That we say, okay, we have 22 parcels here. at $1 million each rather than having someone come in and do a $35 million development.
I like your idea of $1 million each. Yeah. I think that's a great point, and I think it goes back to what Marco said about Howard Street. And the thing about a place like Howard Street in its heyday is no one did a top-down plan or built a bunch of big buildings. That was, you know, and especially in a community that had been very disenfranchised and overtly discriminated against, it was very organic. You know, small businesses, people, you know, they built their business up over time, whether that was a club, whether that was the Matthews Hotel. And I think you're right that that's, I think that's a philosophical thing the American urban policy and planning professions going through right now in the United States is getting away from those giant mega projects. You know, they have a place. There are great things that happen, you know, in convention centers and stadiums and things like that. But not, you know, Kyle uses this analogy, which I'm going to steal. You know, sometimes it's more important to hit a lot of singles than it is to swing for the fence on every at-bat. And so I think that's an important perspective.
I want to maybe create a little controversy here. Do you agree, Marco? Isn't it easier just to do the big hall project that gets the big headlines? Look at what we're doing, as opposed to doing it piecemeal. Your former planning director, you're a special advisor to the mayor right now.
Yeah, I would agree doing the piecemeal. I could tell you that a number of developers have come to the mayor and said they want all the projects, and even the projects that we're doing with the landmark building, they want all that too. And the mayor said absolutely not. He's not agreeing to do that, and I think it's the right decision.
The thing too, we have a commercial vacancy challenge on Main Street of trying to keep businesses downtown and fill the buildings that we have. If we were to build new on the Innerbelt, would that make the problem worse, or would it, you know? And given that city resources are limited, man and woman hours are limited, my sense is that we'd be better to keep the team focused on the buildings that we have and save the Innerbelt a development conversation for a later day.
I think I like the idea of, like you said, of having small ideas to come together for big. I think there still has to be an oversight or master plan, exactly, because you don't want everybody coming in and say, I'm going to do apartment, and I'm going to do one too, and then you get like all the same stuff. And so you want to make sure it's a good mix. So I think you need kind of a combination. I can see the benefits of having small plans coming together, but I think you still need that overriding goal that the community is trying to achieve.
That has been exactly my advice to the mayor, basically, that, you know, diversity of development, distribution of risk. So if one thing doesn't work out as planned, it doesn't cripple. Again, that's what happened with the Innerbelt, right? We built this giant road that was going to solve all our problems, except it didn't. But as was just said, the idea of having it informed still by some sort of vision, you know, that could be a little bit tweaked, could be a little bit flexible, but an overall general idea of this is what we want to see, this is what we do not want to see.
Next question. Right here.
My name is Yoli Miller, and my question is about time and aesthetics. The art district and the music district in Akron is basically cut in half by the opening of 59, which is Perkins Street. We have a brand new hotel, and it is constantly busy. There are people coming in and out all the time. There is no parking in Northside. Yet, you know, as you well know, the streets in Northside are so torn up, and there are so many dead ends because of construction that the businesses are failing there. And yet, the people who come to the hotel are looking to go out to eat, are looking for places to go shopping, for entertainment. We have a great music. We have amazing art. And we have a potential to be a great tourist landing spot. We have the national parks. We have a lot of greening, a lot of green planning in Akron. We have beautiful buildings. We have a beautiful downtown. We have great parks. And all our tourists see is that street there that doesn't let them go anywhere unless they're in a car. And when they get in a car, they can't get anywhere because of all the construction. We have a gallery on Bluff Street, and it was a beautiful brick and stone street, and it now looks worse than a third country street, and I know because I used to live in one. It rains, and all you get are these rivers of mud. And it's the same in the south side, and it's the same on the on and off ramps on Dart and I forget what the other, yes. You go down, you know, everything is orange cones or dirt. It is mud when it rains, and it's dust when it doesn't. How long do we have to live like this, and how long do we have to turn people away who want to come here? You get visitors, they fall in love with the city, they fall in love with the people, they fall in love with the music and the art. And, you know, first question is, can I get a job? Second question is, where can I live? Third question is, how do I get around? How long? How long do we as citizens have to live with what 59 is turning out to be, which is an eyesore, and it hasn't even been closed that long?
Well, I mean, I think we're all frustrated with the streets and how they are torn up.
Yeah, that's a given. But
let's say this is what progress looks like. Progress is like this. As a ward councilman, you know, we would tear up somebody's street and sidewalks, and they'd be complaining. Then after we get it all done, you know, we were fantastic. We always made sure that we timed it so it was election time, so we get reelected. But it's it's going to take some time. But I think we're going down the right path of making these infrastructure improvements. Some of we're, of course, are being forced to because it's this massive sewer project that we have to do. And why so many roads are tore up at the same time is that we have a timeline from the federal government. And if we don't meet these guidelines, bills are already high enough. They'll be higher, and we don't want that to happen. So if people be just a little patient, understand we are working it very hard and trying to get rid of that because it is terrible to get around. Now, I went to a meeting with the mayor one day, and I was following him, and we just got lost. Both of us, they follow him at turnaround, and the mayor was saying, hey, you know, how do we get someplace? And I told him he was the mayor, he had to figure it out.
I was going to say, that is when you ask about getting about the Interbelt specifically. No, we don't hear a lot, but we do hear a lot from readers and people with the traffic that's going on and the detours and all that, and Broadway up that way, you get it. So that's what I've heard people say. Is there a way to get in and out of Akron without seeing orange cones? I was like, well, not really right now, but I guess that's part of progress, right?
And I think maybe, Yoli, to add to your question a little bit, what I heard in there, in addition to the frustration, again, that we share about the construction, is that you're getting at, I think, a real issue with Northside and Perkins Street and downtown still is. And that's the legacy of yet another urban renewal project, which was the Y Bridge. And so, you know, at one time, Northside was Main Street, and that bridge went straight across the valley to North Hill, the viaduct. And I think, while it's not in the cards to put that bridge back, we do have to think about how we get across Perkins Street easier. The new intersection, I've walked it when we did the ribbon cutting for Rosie, the drilling machine. I walked. Actually, I think Marco offered me a ride on the way back, because I try to walk to a lot of things. And it is easier to cross, but it's fair. I think this is your point. It still feels disconnected. And so, right. And so we are thinking about creative ways. You know, we've even talked about, could we do stairs or an elevator off of the Y Bridge and take people, you could cross at High Street, get down there. People have talked about a tunnel. A tunnel could be very expensive. And tunnels still may not be the best way to feel like it's connected. So I think when you were talking about Bluff Street and Furnace and some of the other streets, with the way we're thinking about reconnecting the Interbelt, I think more and more we have to look at all the areas surrounding downtown, not just on the other side of the Interbelt, but in Cascade Valley, over in University Park, to the south. There's still, you know, it's kind of a quirk of geography and partly planning in Akron that the downtown is like very much like this island. And I think we have to find ways to get on and off of the island, but not building another freeway to do it.
So the work has to be done. Can't get around that. You can't get there from here. It's impossible with all the work going on. Seems like somebody, Kyle, could come up with an ingenious idea to apply for a Night Cities Challenge grant.
Some people have for these issues. The Northside disconnection's something that we've made a couple grants to try to get at with breadcrumbs of activity on Howard Street to try to make it more inviting and safer. You go by the Matthews Hotel Monument, then there's that kind of dead block with Austin Bioinnovation Institute. But if you've been that brave and you've made it that far, it's worth it with Blue and everything else over there. So you're right. I mean, the key is connecting. Let's get those that connection right and then keep working our way down Main Street.
Thank you. Next question, over here.
How you guys doing? All right, my name is Ace. I'm with Be Me Community here in Akron. I've been here since I was 10, 11 years old. All right, so I want to just give a perspective on the way downtown Akron looked when I first got here. All right, coming from Cleveland, I used to look at Cleveland like, man, I don't know if you guys remember, there was a Batman and Robin thing hanging in Cleveland. Big sign, like the biggest LeBron, but there was Batman and Robin. Anybody remember that? We all Akronites here. Okay, so as a Clevelander, I remember that. I remember my mom taking me downtown. We paid our bills down there. We had restaurants. We went to the movies. We went to the movies downtown, right? Downtown was everything. We didn't have no transportation. We did it with public transportation. And when I moved to Akron, we went to Akron, and she figured, well, we're just going to go downtown. And we went downtown. It seemed to me that it was just one street, and that would be the main street. But there was a Woolworths there, I believe. There was a Woolworths Polsky building. There was an actual O'Neill's? Was that O'Neill's? Yeah, it was like the Hattery was down there, a couple restaurants. And then, am I right? Now we're talking Akronites, okay. Okay, so what ended up happening is as a young guy looking at that stuff fade away, not knowing why it was fading away, not really understanding, but knowing that it was gone and being able to, I had to take notes real quick. So like I said, I used to think that it was all downtown, there was retail and everything. So now, been here forever, married 17 years, doing a lot of stuff in the community. And me and my wife the other day was just talking about Rolling Acres, you brought it up, Jason. Rolling Acres. And then we thought about Chapel Hill. We just went to Chapel Hill. Like, God, what is happening at Chapel Hill? Like, where is that? Where's everybody going to shop? Where's everybody going? There used to be those spaces. So I always think about things in the creative aspect, right? So you're looking at the space where the Interbelt was. And the first thing I think of is the flats in Cleveland. The first thing I think of is the flats, and not where it used to be, but what they're trying to do down there with the housing like you guys discussed, but more retail, throw a movie theater down there. The things they did out in Portage Crossing, I mean, I stay on Northfield, and me and my wife would go there, I wonder what they're building today. Boom, it's a Panda. Boom, it's a movie theater. And it seemed like it's just that easy. I know a lot of stuff is going into it, but I guess my question, I just wanted to say that stuff, but my question would be, I have a lot of creative ideas, and I have a board that I call an action committee that we come up with crazy ideas, think tank stuff. Who do we talk to get some of those ideas actually heard, some of these ideas for what it could be? Because I know there's a lot of, you know, reimagining, but I have a crew of people that got some great ideas, artists, creative thinkers, and things of that nature. Thank you.
I think I'm going to make you spin some records while we have that conversation, but I would love to talk to you more. I think sharing those with the mayor's office as well, and especially when we're at this early idea stage, maybe, you know, putting them into like a fairly short synopsis of just this is the general idea. I think that gives us an ability to kind of look at them real quickly. I think we would share them with partners like Kyle and others to kind of get, you know, feedback. And I think the mayor's office is planning on doing this when we really start to engage people. I think taking a lot of advantage of social media to both have it be a two-way medium, you know, to have ideas coming in, feedback going out, and vice versa. And I think, you know, social media, I always say it's a means to an end. It's the start of the conversation and not the end. And I think as those ideas start to get distilled, then, you know, public forums and other things where we can talk like this. But ultimately, I think the more ideas at this stage, the better.
You know, we meet every once a week, usually, Economic Development Coordinator Committee, where we talk about different type of projects, and we vet projects. People come in and sell us different ideas, so maybe that's a place that some ideas you could bring forth and we could talk about them sometime. That would be probably a good place to talk about those ideas.
Anything else to add, panel? Next. Look at that. What happened to the time? We do have time for one last question.
How much lady right? She had her hand up so long. Yeah. I don't even know who she is, but she...
Where are we pointing?
You're right there. Yeah, she's had her hand up for so long.
Hi, I'm Josie Jones. My question is, I guess, kind of related to his question. There's a lot of talk about what could happen or like conversations like this, but I feel like a lot of times it becomes like case studies and like conversations. How does a community member, we're starting from the ground up, so how does a community member get ready to be able to help you? How do they get ready to apply for a request for proposals or grants or any of those things to actually participate as opposed to just talking?
It's a great question, and I think, you know, I look at it maybe on two levels, and this isn't to put my friend Kyle on the spot, but what I loved about when Knight did the 500 plates, in addition to it was just a cool idea of 500 people eating dinner on a freeway, it's a real opportunity, I think, to engage with people and get ideas in a way, and I think Marco and I and people like us are sensitive to this, that, you know, in government, it's intimidating, say, to come to the city council and stand at that podium or come downtown even maybe to city hall in ways that we can engage with people where it's more of a equal playing field, so to speak, where, you know, everyone's in street clothes, we're out on the freeway eating dinner. And so I like the kind of creative engagement like that. But I think the substance of your question, too, was at some point, you actually have something you want to share more formally. And I do think that's something, again, I think sharing those ideas with the mayor's office. But I think it is also incumbent on us, and we're still working out how to do this, is to have maybe some ways where we have some face time to actually discuss those ideas so you don't just feel like you sent something in and it kind of disappeared and you don't know what happened. So I think if you have suggestions on what would be an effective way to do that, I think we're very open to ideas, because I would be the first to admit that I don't know everything, and I think we can always improve the processes we have.
Anything to add, Kyle?
I would just say you don't have to wait for the inner belt. The inner belt's kind of obviously the focus of today's conversation, but I think this administration set the tone that they're interested in neighborhoods determining what they want to be, and that each of those 24 different places has its own character and its own strengths and its own challenges. And I think there's an attitude from the city of genuinely listening to residents, and from local philanthropy, we're always interested in good ideas for the city. Knight's focused in the city of Akron, and so as you have thoughts, you can email me. Flacco has my email.
I'm going to take a liberty here. Just before we wrap up, it's lightning round. Just a quick fill-in-the-blank here from each of our panels. The inner belt represents an opportunity to blank. Marco.
Make Akron a destination.
Kyle.
Invite people to enjoy public space and public life.
Reconnect our community.
Cheryl?
Help shape our downtown and reflect Akron, the community of Akron and its people.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cheryl Powell from the Beacon Journal, Jason Segedy, Akron City Planning Director, Kyle Kudici from the Knight Foundation, and Marco Somerville, Special Advisor to the Mayor of Akron. And thank you all for being here and being part of the conversation. One quick self-promotional item from myself. As part of the Listen to America tour, Huffington Post is partnering with local media organizations to bring reporting that's important to the local area where they're going to a national audience. We were very humbled and very proud to be selected by Huffington Post to present a story about Akron. And we pitched them a number of ideas. The one that they really liked was taking a look at the role that Akron's Bhutanese refugees and population are bringing to the city in terms of helping its revival and its rejuvenation. There's a terrific story that ran on Huffington Post's website this morning, written by M.L. Schultze. You can check it out there. Also, all this week, we are airing stories from M.L. Schultze looking at different facets of the impact of the Bhutanese community on Akron. Be sure to check them out. That's every morning during Morning Edition. If you missed today's, it's on our website, wksu.org. And that's M.L. Schultze over there. Again, thank you all for being here this evening. Huffington Post, Robin, do you have anything to close and say? Thanks. Have a wonderful evening. Thanks for being part of the conversation tonight.